Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. Today I have a special guest. We don't usually bring in food books or diet books on my show, but I decided to make this an exception as it looks at our gut and holistic health. So it is my great honor to invite Kristen Grace McGarry to the show, who has written a book. It's called A Program for Resetting Your Metabolism, The Holistic Keto for Your Gut Health. Now, I've been somewhat following keto for a few years now. I fall in and out for different reasons. I find it sometimes a little bit challenging because, well, let's face it, everything is out there and you, when you're really hungry, you just kind of grab something, which is really bad. Most of the things I've been very good with, we will talk about sugar and how terrible it is for our health. But I really liked your book just because it brought in a more holistic perspective. And that is what the show's all about. So welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks so much for having me. And I love where you're starting us off. Can I just jump in?
Absolutely.
I love how you framed that you've been kind of in and out of keto, falling in and out, and sometimes you just grab food because you're really hungry and that it's bad. I'd like to start there.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of us have this good, bad reward, punishment, and shaming we do around food and sustenance. And this is also translated into our spiritual practices. And I think it's a really important point. We don't even catch ourselves doing this, but it's very, very common in our culture to reward ourselves with food and to punish ourselves with food. Yeah. And sometimes it's unconscious or subconscious and we're not fully aware of it. And other times we sit in judgment around it. Like, this is something bad that I've done and I need to fix this, or shame myself for it or punish myself later for it. And I find it's not only with food, it also happens with spirituality and our spiritual practices or our yoga practice or our exercise practice or all these different things in our life. So I think it's a good starting point to just begin to heighten our awareness even more about how our culture impacts our thinking and our belief system around food and sustenance.
Yeah, it's a good point. Shame is huge, especially when it comes to anything around our body image and when it comes to, you know, looking at food. For a long time, I have known which foods are good for me and which aren't. Some of the things you talk about in your book about, you know, the difference between food sensitivities and allergies, very important, because that's a big piece that, you know, a lot of people kind of lose. Now, keto's been around. It's kind of the new hype diet. It really isn't a diet as much as a lifestyle change, but the sugar aspect, I mean, the sugar is the problem. In fact, the last few years, when I do a New Year's show, I like to talk about, you know, the addiction to sugar, because I mean, it's been proven that it is more addictive than cocaine. I mean, it really truly is a drug. And, you know, yes, every once in a while I have some teas. You know, mostly the sugar comes from fruit, but, you know, I try to limit that. I get, you know, I'm pretty good with sugar. However, you know, at certain times of the year when, you know, apple season comes out and I really like the early Macs because they just have that added crunch. But as soon as I have a few too many, my body will go through, you know, a detox, or it'll go through the, you know, the blood sugar levels. And I know my gut is out of balance. I've known it for a while, and I've become a lot more conscious of the foods that will trigger it. And, you know, sugar is one. And whether it comes from fruit or actual sugar, my body doesn't really necessarily differentiate. Sometimes it does. Sometimes fruit is okay. Certain fruits are definitely okay, and other fruits not so much. But, you know, there are times that you just want some.
Well, I love what you're bringing up because, Lori, this, it sounds like you're working with conscious eating. And I do mention this in my book. I have a lot of really cool science, medical stuff in my book. And then I also tie in Asian medicine perspective of food as medicine. And I tie in some unconscious thought patterns around food and shaming. And I have a whole chapter on sugar and how to deal with sugar and how to deal with sugar cravings. And I think what you're bringing up is something many of us are experiencing or struggling with. I know in the past I have struggled with sugar cravings and unsure where they were coming from. And in my book, I list all the different places from where a sugar craving can arise, everything from a real biochemical imbalance or a nutrient imbalance to an emotional stress. And so I think it's important as we're really creating more consciousness or awareness around conscious eating that we begin to dive a little deeper. Like it's not only about sugar content, but why are we craving it and why are we reaching for it? And once we can begin to identify what's underlying our desires, we have more power. We have more empowerment and we can then make better choices. If we're flying blind and we're just kind of being triggered and going from a reactive pattern of some kind from our past, then in a way, we're in a jail in a way. We're not really free. We're tied down by these old strategies of protection or these old reactive mechanisms, and they may not be serving us in our current consciousness, in our current desire for health and wellness. So I like to walk people through that aspect as well as looking at food sensitivities. And while we're on the topic of sugar, food sensitivities can cause food cravings. Right. And often I've found that people who crave things are usually sensitive to the things they crave most. And you're right on about sugar being addictive. And it literally wakes up these certain aspects of our brain that are tied to addiction patterns, very similar to cocaine and heroin. And it can be very challenging to extract ourselves from that strong desire, that strong craving, if we don't have any awareness around it and if we're flying blind. And the more that we're empowered with knowledge, the more we're listening to our bodies, the more we're working with our emotional bodies and our spiritual body, the more tools we have to really address the root of it. And then I have found when people do that, it's very, very easy to release sugar. And when people are not doing that and they're stuck in it, it can be much more challenging. So I like to give people tools that they can implement to really feel empowered around their life and their health, and especially around sugar stuff. And I think it's perfectly fine to eat with the seasons. And if you want that fresh, ripe apple off of the tree, I say do it, but perhaps add some almond butter with it so that it's less sugar hitting your system all at once. If you keep the skin on, you have more fiber. If you add some almond butter or cashew nut butter, then it can help slow down the sugar hitting your system. So I think there's a smarter way to eat with the seasons and still enjoy something that's fresh from your tree and possibly from a local farmer and organic. And looking at our motivation of why we want it and just honoring that can be a huge step for a lot of people.
Yes, huge. It's fascinating. And I loved your analogy of the garden versus the mechanic. I think, you know, that's a beautiful metaphor to looking at how the world sort of sees, you know, the medical profession and, you know, the alternative medical. I mean, in Canada here, we are allowed to have certain alternative medicine considered as doctors that our taxes will allow and stuff. It's very interesting because we've come a long way. We still have a little ways to go, but we have come a long way. I even remember seeing a quote, today about, somebody saying, health doesn't always come from a pill. I'm sorry, health never comes from a pill unless it's a vitamin. It's like they had a beautiful thing after, but it's like the first line just threw me. It's like, nope, health never comes from a pill. Mm-hmm. But, just the way we see our bodies, and we really do need to become more conscious and aware. And the beauty of your book, I mean, you talk a lot about, the gut brain. And part of the work that I've done over the last few years has been, looking at the multiple brains. Now, you brought in the heart, and you brought in HeartMath, which is an amazing resource of information that they have, and how they can deal with stress and, how you can put yourself in resonance. And the multiple brain scenario is that we can put all of the brains in resonance. Our mind, in our head, the highest form of resonance is creativity. With the heart, it's compassion. And with the gut, it's courage. And, being intuitive, we've all had those, those gut intuitions, which generally aren't, the beautiful, loving heart intuition, but the ones where, there might be a warning. Our gut is so important. It's the neurons that are involved in our gut is as big as a dog and a cat's brains. So it's not a minor thing. It's longer. It's bigger. It's literally from the mouth out. But it's powerful. We just don't realize, I think, just how powerful the gut is. And like you write, it really is about the food that we're putting in our guts. There's nothing else that can change, what's happening within our whole system. And the gut is so important. I think it's like convenience has won out over sustenance or really thriving. And the more, the older you get or, the more damage we do to our bodies, the more we start to realize just how important, we are what we eat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true. And I actually, in the book, changed the we are what we eat because I was feeling limited by it. And for me, what I was teaching in this book is we're not so much what we eat, we are more what we're able to break down and digest. Mm. I think some people are investing a lot of time and energy and money into eating well, but they're not actually able to break it down and digest it and therefore reap the benefit of it.
Good point.
And so focusing on gut health really levels this up and gives us access to our own body's ability to really heal and regenerate. And I think you're spot on. The gut as the second brain connected to the heart, connected to our brain and our head is so important to recognize how connected these are. I've worked with dolphins quite a bit as in a therapeutic setting and horses in an equine assisted therapy program. And one thing I learned in working with horses, we call them the dolphins of the land, is that their brain is as big as our heart. Mm. And our brain is as big as their heart. So there's this crossover. It's so neat. And so when you were talking about coherence and speaking about heart math, I was reminded of some of my experiences with these incredible horses and patients and how incredibly therapeutic it was to have that connection with the heart, with the brain. And now that we're talking about the gut, bringing in the gut, and it is food. Food is medicine. And our emotions, our stress levels, the environment in which we live, the chemicals in our environment, the chemicals that might have been sprayed on the playground where your children play or in the park where you walk your dog, all of these impact our health and our gut. The amount of glyphosates coming from the use of Roundup, for example, is a real contributing factor to gut damage. The amount of heavy metals or mercury can really strongly damage the gut and the brain. And this is not woo-woo. There is tons of science out there on this. Real, really incredible science. And it's just not being put in the public's eye yet. And part of the thing, one of the things I want to empower people with is more information so that people can be informed consumers and really learn what gut health is about and how they can make very simple changes in their life. It doesn't have to be an overhaul of everything in their cabinet or it doesn't have to be taking 25 supplements a day. It really can just be a 1 degree shift in thinking and in lifestyle that can have a long lasting impact on obtaining and enjoying vibrant health.
Yeah. Like, I do find this whole topic really fascinating because it is something that I'm working on. It is something that I'm becoming much more conscious and aware of. I certainly feel the difference when I have certain foods. I know I haven't been digesting properly. I actually had a medical intuitive on a couple months ago, and she was, you know, we talked about the sugar problem. I mean, the sugar problem isn't a problem until I stop doing it and then I go into low blood sugar and, and then I feel faint and, you know, but I noticed that, you know, it becomes a craving at certain times. Maybe anyway, she brought it back like to 3 different points in my life. And one of them being, you know, between the ages of 3 and 6, having an undiagnosed kidney. How did she word that? It wasn't a kidney infection. Oh, I had strep in my kidney. And at that time, I had a lot of problems with my ears, which probably came from that. But instead of them treating the kidney, they treated the ears. And I had, there was one year that I was under anesthetic 13 times. So not only did I become immune to penicillin, but I hated going to the hospital. And I mean, that would have created even more problems for the whole system, especially if you're looking at it, you know, from a holistic perspective, having antibiotics all that often and treating the wrong problem, or, I mean, it was definitely a problem, but probably misdiagnosed and, you know, it affecting everything since then, because it's never actually truly been dealt with, and I'm still not sure exactly how to deal with it, but that will come. Maybe, you know.
I'd be happy to help you with that. Yes, I'd be very happy. I can help you connect those dots. But I hear what you're saying, and it sounds like that they were treating a symptom, which is very common in the Western medical model. I started off in Western medicine. I was an EMT. I volunteered in the emergency room, and I was set to become a Western medical physician. I was pre-med, and then I shifted gears and I went towards Asian medical school and went to Asian medical school and was certified in functional medicine and about 28 other modalities. And I understand the system and how they're doing the best they can with the tools they have. And that system is very much focused on disease, dis-ease, and symptoms rather than treating the root cause. It's just not set up to do that. And so it sounds like they were trying to treat the symptoms of ear stuff, ear infections. And often ear infections in a young child comes from food sensitivities, not being breastfed and having a gut that didn't get a good start and might have imbalances in its microbiome. And it's quite easy to work with that with children. And I'm sorry that you suffered. And I also trust that that's been a big part of your healing journey and has allowed you to impact many more people with your experience and your wisdom. And so one of the things I like to do as a health detective, as a health and lifestyle alchemist, is connect those dots for people. And my second book is actually on that, one of those things, and it's on functional blood chemistry analysis. And there's a way in which I order a lab and look at a lab that is very, very different from the Western medical model and from how even naturopaths are trained. And I also do an extensive intake that looks for these clues in someone's upbringing, not just what happened to them physically, but what happened mentally and emotionally, and the imprints that they received from their family of origin, from their culture, as well as what they were fed and what chemicals they were around. So I really like to approach it from full body, mind, spirit vantage point. And when we do that, when I do that, I can much more easily connect all those dots for someone so that they can enjoy a vibrant life and release the blocks to healing. My third book is on blocks to healing. And this is where I really do a deep dive into all the things that prevent someone from fully healing from, say, these ear infections and the use of chronic use of antibiotics, et cetera. And so there's a way in which we can approach that that offers your body the opportunity to finally heal. It's like closing the loop on that part of your history. And it's really fun. And it's very freeing. And it's very empowering because you no longer have to guess. It, you know, I mean, I've studied muscle reflexology and kinesiology, muscle reflex testing for, I don't know, 20 plus years. And it's still nice to look at a lab and I can see things in people's bodies that's not common. You know, your medical intuitive gets that. And although I don't advertise that for myself, I definitely see and feel and hear things in people's bodies that a lot of people don't. And I still like to see a lab and still like to see a really solid test on food sensitivity testing. And there aren't many labs out there that do proper food sensitivity testing or accurate. So I'm very selective in who I work with in that way. And tying it all together for someone can be such a relief. And it's a lot of fun.
Yes. Well, we all like confirmation. I mean, that's kind of why you're using, you know, the labs. And it's the confirmation of your intuition. And it might pick up something that, you know, minusculely different. But yeah, I was adopted. So I was never breastfed. So that would all, you know, line up with everything you just said, which is kind of cool. And I definitely want to interview you again when the... It's certainly the third book, but probably the second one too. So,
yeah,
sounds great.
It's fun.
You're on your way. You've got lots of stuff going, which is great. I love it. So let's look at. So you do talk about, you know, exploring the emotions and the emotional gut. I mean, the emotions are really key because if you're stressed, and you also talk about, you know, proper chewing our food, which I think, you know, a lot of times we, you know, I'm going to say pretty much we probably most of the time don't chew our food enough. I like the part where you said, if you can identify each, you know, each thing that's in your mouth, it's like, yep, I can usually do that.
Uh-huh.
So there are important
I understand.
Things, right? Yeah. But digestion is this key that, because, I mean, there's the leaky gut, which is becoming a huge phenomenon. Diabetes 2, like skyrocketing. I mean, we have these problems that can easily be, I don't know, necessarily fixed, but in a lot of cases, they can be fixed. And they're important that we need to look at. That's why I wanted to interview you, because it's the gut health that is just, it's like we're you know, okay, so I want to go back in history of keto. I mean, probably, you know, there's a lot of dirty keto out there. And that's the new phrase that they've given it, where, you know, they don't care about how much protein you eat. They don't care about, you know, where the proteins come from. Dairy is huge in a lot of them. And although there is some dairy that I can have, which is, well, pretty much cheap, I had sort of started falling back into my old pattern of loving, you know, cheddar and old cheddar. And then I realized it's really not been good. And I know when my gut's not digesting, and you can tell, I mean, you feel it. And, you know, certain things happen. Like, I was on a really good path, and then my mom passed away, and then it just fell back. Like, okay, that kind of blew that. But so, you know, we start again and we do the best we can. And that's, you know, that's the bit that we kind of, you know, end up shaming ourselves a lot by not acknowledging that we are doing the best we can. Sometimes our bodies are craving for reasons we don't understand. Sometimes it's the emotional stuff. You know, the women and using weight as a protective method, which you talk about as one of your case studies. I mean, that's huge. We do that a lot. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that can interfere with digestion. And I think that's the big key, is that we're not realizing just how important digestion is. Like, we're eating and we are defecating, but it comes out in the wrong ways, or it, you know, we get constipated and then we take something for the constipation, and we're not realizing that it's actually our digestion that's the problem.
Yes, exactly. Exactly correct. And I think it hasn't really been given the attention it deserves, our beautiful guts. Mm-hmm. And the history of keto is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. It's not a fad diet. Keto has been around since the 1920s, and it was created by physicians who began feeding a keto diet to young children who had seizure disorders. And these children had miraculous results just by changing their diet to a keto diet, because a keto-type diet is amazing for our brains. There's also research showing how a ketogenic type diet, which is low to no carbs, helps prevent Alzheimer's and can even reverse certain kinds of dementia. Right. Very, very interesting how what we eat, our guts, and the connection to our neurology, our brain, our neurochemistry. And we haven't really paid attention to our guts, unless it's upset, unless we have explosive diarrhea, we got to run to the bathroom. Then it's kind of like we're paying attention and we want these symptoms to go away. But other than that, we don't necessarily mind the gut well. And I think it's important to address not only the food, but as you brought up, the emotions. So when someone has digestive issues, part of what I like to dive into is what they're eating, how they're eating, when they're eating, who they're eating with, and their emotional environment, internally and externally. Are they using food to stuff emotions? Are they comfort eating? Do they have emotions stored in excess tissue on their body? I'm also a psychosomatic therapist, and I read faces and hands and feet and your whole body. It tells me your history. Your physical structure is like your blueprint of your soul. And so not only am I looking at food, but I'm also looking at your emotional well-being and how you might have been taught to use food as a strategy of protection to help you feel better. And that does play into leaky gut. It does, you know, I often will ask people the question, what are you really swallowing in your life? What aren't you digesting well in your life? Is it the relationship with your boss? Is it stress with your kids? Is it stress around money or your partnership or your living arrangement? Or, you know, there are things in our lives that can feel difficult to digest. There can be trauma and tragedy in our lives that can be very difficult to digest, and it literally impacts our gut. So yes, it's, you know, I wasn't breastfed either, and I had a lot of antibiotics, as you did when I was a child, and it absolutely screwed up my gut, and it also put me on the path of getting an autoimmune issue, an autoimmune disease, because my gut was in horrible disarray. But I don't stop there. I know that if my immune system is not functioning well, if my gut is not functioning well, if I only treat it with food, if I only treat it with supplements and I don't address the underlying emotional and spiritual components, I've only done half of the work and I'm not going to get as good or as lasting a result. And so I want to empower your listeners through this interview and also through the books that I'm creating and the speaking engagements I'm going to, that there's more to the picture and people can gain the tools they need to really get to the root of it and make small changes that have a huge impact.
Yeah.
I'd like to add one other thing too, Lori, that I love what you brought up around the emotions. And I want to add one more thing is there's a beautiful book by Candace Pert, who's no longer with us on the planet. She's brilliant. She wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion. And people like Bruce Lipton, who's written The Biology of Belief, and Dr. Joe Dispenza teaches this, and Greg Braden. I'm in the same camp that our thoughts, unconscious or conscious, our history can inform what's going on in the present moment through skewed lenses, through lenses that are not accurate in what's real in this moment. And if we allow that to continue, we may not be as healthy as we could be. We may have gut dysfunction. And there's a lot of science now showing how our emotions actually change our biology. What we think and feel changes how our genes express themselves. And there's so much beautiful science around this. There's a field of science called epigenetics that shows how our nutrition and our environment and our relationships will either help us upregulate healthy genes or upregulate sick genes. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of how their thoughts and emotions really impact how healthy they are and how healthy they feel.
Yeah. I didn't know about Candace. That was one of the, I don't know, probably one of the first books I read, because I thought it was so, that was just so fascinating, that, you know, molecules of emotion. I've interviewed Dr. Joe Dispenza. I mean, there's so much more to the world that we, you know, we're just not, if we're not exploring all of the different areas, if we're just like you said, if we're just looking at the physical, we're missing something, because, I mean, the physical only happens after all of the other things have just not been heard, after your gut, after your emotions. I mean, once if they're not being heard and they're not being heard and they keep trying to, you know, bring in awareness, you know, finally something has to break down, and we usually don't do anything or make any changes until something starts to break down, until we start to feel uncomfortable. It's amazing. And it's a fascinating world that we, you know, we sort of get caught up in just the day-to-day, you know, what's happening right now. But, you know, we often go into the past and worry about all the stuff from the past. We worry about what could be happening in the future. We're never really truly in that now moment. And if we were in that now moment, even when we know how incredibly powerful it is, we just get lost in that day-to-day stuff that sort of happens around us, and it affects us, and we don't acknowledge how much, you know, somebody who comes in to your environment and into your aura, if you believe in auras, because they're so huge sometimes, you know, you could be driving and somebody goes by in road rage, and then all of a sudden you're angry and not understanding why you're angry, but you know, it becomes something. And then, you know, it can ruin your whole day by not being aware. It just, it's those little things of just taking those moments and just becoming more conscious of, you know, why am I wanting to devour not just a piece of chocolate, but an entire, you know, bar that's meant for, you know, 5 days. You know, we just forget to, we just go on automatic instead of being more conscious of the whys. And then we don't really do anything until something is hurting or something is wrong. And it's unfortunate.
Yes. I call it, I believe that the body speaks the mind. And the body speaks the mind through a language of symptoms in our body and stress in our life. And I learned that from Dr. Darren Weissman, who created the Lifeline Technique. He's a good friend of mine. He's a Hay House author. And there's this kind of waking up to present time consciousness. And there's this path to waking up that many of your listeners are likely on. And part of waking up is pressing the pause button on the impulse for quick fixes, quick food, quick results, quick this, quick that, fast, fast, fast. And when we can press pause and come back to this present moment, we can better approach our health, our gut, our nutrition, our relationships from a place of wholeness, coming from our higher self rather than autopilot, as you called it. Yeah. And I believe that prevention is key. And if we're on autopilot, we're likely not preventing imbalances. We're likely feeding imbalances. And it's only when we can pause and remember our wholeness that it's like automatically a prevention. It's like we don't necessarily have to do anything differently other than pause and breathe and bring our awareness back here to the here and now and what's right in front of us. And this doesn't mean we don't have a calendar and schedule meetings. You know, that's an extreme approach. That's not what I mean. But it's this aspect of waking up, of remembering who we truly are. And this is the sweet spot for healing. Whether it's your gut, whether it's your brain, whether it's diabetes, whether it's, you know, you have a cold or a flu, it's leaning into those symptoms and befriending them, learning about yourself by learning the language of your body. And when we can lean into them with appropriate empowerment and guidance, we can have a deeper exploration and awakening of who we truly are and then step more fully into that. And then what we eat comes from a completely different place. The words we use, the emotions we experience, it's coming from a different place. And yes, we're not always there, but we can strive for that and we can be there most of the time. And there are ways to learn how to do that and really be successful. It's no longer out of reach. It's really very, very close at hand all of the time.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, keto. There's a protocol to keto. Again, there's the dirty keto, which kind of gives you no, you eat as much protein and dairy and as little carbs as possible. But that's truly not healthy.
Well, it's junk food, basically. Yes. Dirty keto is junk food. Yeah. It's people who do keto, but they eat at McDonald's and Wendy's and fast food. Yeah. Dirty keto is just, you know, whatever, but without carbs.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And we know that although it may assist you to lose weight, your quality, well, it's no different. And you're probably not digesting. Well, you're more than likely not digesting. So we're looking at something that, you know, there is a protocol. So 20% protein, and it's based on your weight versus, and that's a big thing, because usually when people think keto, they think eat all the meat you want, eat all the meat, dairy. You know, that's what people think. I think they kind of go to the Atkins diet as the one of the, you know, probably one of the first diets that came out that kind of was dirty keto. Although, yeah. And yep, I tried it. Didn't work for me. Probably because I wasn't digesting the crap that I was eating. So we're looking at inflammation.
Inflammatory, yes, inflammatory.
That's
foods.
Where
yes,
I was going wrong. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Yeah. Well, my keto approach is different. It's very unique, and there's just nothing else like it out there, which is why I was so driven and excited to create this book to help people who already are doing keto or who are curious about keto to really take it to the next level. And that is a holistic keto approach designed to help your gut remain healthy and or heal. Right. And it does mean not eating, not consuming inflammatory foods. And this may surprise people. A lot of people don't realize that dairy is inflammatory, even if it's sheep cheese. Mm-hmm. And if someone has gut stuff, zero dairy. People, adults, do not have the enzymes to properly break down dairy products after the age of 5. Mm-hmm. And even if there's less lactose in it, casein is an issue. And the ratios of fats and proteins in milk or different dairy products are not even close to what is in human milk. Mm-hmm. So our digestive tracts, our immune systems are not prepared for it. Another scary example is that in cow milk, for example, there are 200 to 400 foreign bovine, which means cow, viruses and bacteria. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's pasteurized or raw, your immune system needs to deal with that and will be on alert. All of a sudden, you drink a glass of milk or you have some cheese and you all of a sudden have hundreds of foreign invaders in your system, that can make your immune system wonky. And so all dairy in my holistic keto program is out because it causes inflammation, even if people aren't aware of it. I liken it to when you brush your teeth. You brush your teeth twice a day because science shows us that if you don't do that, the bacteria that's in your mouth is going to accumulate and it'll cause a cavity. Well, you can have the beginning stages of that cavity, which is can be an immune system issue, for weeks and months before you have a symptom of pain and need to go to the dentist. But it's still happening subclinically. You just don't notice it. And dairy is the same way. Even if it doesn't give you diarrhea or bloating or gas, or an upset tummy or skin issues, it doesn't mean it's necessarily good for you. It doesn't mean it's not causing low-level inflammation, which will accumulate over time. So one of the inflammatory foods that I coach people on releasing is dairy. And another one, and this is big for keto people, they get a little upset when I tell them this one, are eggs. A lot of people have egg sensitivities and they don't know it. The German biological physicians that I studied with many, many years ago taught me that hens, eggs, cow, milk, and pork were three foods that cause inflammation and can make disease patterns worse. And so I like for people to remove eggs, to release eggs for 2 to 4 months when they start my holistic keto program to see how they do, to give their gut every chance that we can give it to really heal. And then maybe they can do some eggs occasionally and be fine, or maybe they'll have to stay off of them. I'm one of the egg people that I can never do an egg again. It makes me very ill. I have a legitimate sensitivity slash sort of allergy to an egg. And there's a difference between sensitivity and allergy. So eggs are one. Another one are seeds and nuts. So a lot of time, well, all nuts and seeds and even grains contain phytic acid as well as lectins. And these are pro-inflammatory things, some of which Mother Nature put into the seed or nut to make sure it wouldn't get digested so the animal would poop it out and it could regerminate. And so there are ways to minimize phytic acid, for example, in seeds and nuts. If you soak them and dehydrate them, it can be a little labor intensive. There are ways around it. But in the beginning of my holistic keto program, I like people to go off of those to give their gut the chance to really heal. And then if they soak and sprout nuts, great. And then if they want some organic, you know, sprouted almond butter or something, great. Their body can likely handle it much better. Some people just need to be off nuts for longer periods of time. Some people 2 to 4 months is perfect. Other people need to be off a couple of years and then they can go and just do it every once in a while. So I have an individualized approach. It's not one size fits all, but the book goes into all the details of this and gives the reader the tools they need to figure out what will work for their body.
And talk about the differences between allergies and sensitivities. I mean, there are a lot of kids that have allergies to peanuts, but that's very different than our food sensitivities. And if we have a food sensitivity, then we're not digesting. Is that correct?
That's correct. If we have a food sensitivity, it's stemming from immune dysfunction. And because about 75% of your immune system comes from your gut, it's likely your gut has something to do with why you have that reaction. And for people like us that weren't breastfed, we kind of got, you know, a little bit more of a rough start. And so our guts might be a little more sensitive. Our immune systems might need a little more empowerment and support to stay healthy. And so the differences are simple. Those kids that have a peanut allergy have something called an IgE reaction. And IgE is a word for an immunoglobulin. And it's comes from your immune system, and an IgE response is immediate. It's like that kid eats peanuts and they swell up and their throat starts to close and they need an EpiPen and they need to go to the hospital right away. That is a true allergy. Now, what most people have are not immunoglobulin IgE reactions to foods. What they usually have are more hidden food sensitivities. And I've heard a lot of patients that have come to me, talk to me about, well, I did the food elimination diet and I'm not sensitive to anything. No. Okay. Well, unfortunately, the food elimination diet does not really address the hidden food sensitivities because it's only for a few days. And there are some IgG responses to food that won't render a reaction that you'll notice sometimes for 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. So you could eat a banana on January 1st and get a migraine on January 14th and not realize that it was what you ate 14 days ago. So there are very specialized tests, and like I said earlier, I don't trust many of them, that can be used to identify these more hidden food sensitivities. And I highly recommend them to people who have gut issues or mysterious symptoms or food stuff or gas and bloating or diarrhea, constipation, or if they have things like migraines or they have achy joints, we can identify what's going on in terms of what they're eating. People say, well, I eat so well. Well, you know what? I eat really well too. But if I put a certain kind of lettuce on my salad, I sneeze. I have a histamine response to certain kinds of lettuce. Doesn't work for me. And lettuce, people think, gosh, that's so weird. You react to lettuce? Yeah. So I know I need to have spinach in my salad. And I need to have different things in my salad than what people would typically think is healthy. And so I like to empower and educate my patients and people about the food sensitivity thing because so many people don't understand it. With food sensitivity, there's also something called cross-reactivity, and even fewer people get that. Cross-reactivity is there are foods that are, say, non-glutenous, like eggs, like oats, like millet, chocolate, coffee, quinoa, teff, sesame. None of these foods have gluten in them. But the body, because of immune dysfunction, and because there are proteins in certain foods that are similar to certain proteins in gluten, gliadin is one of them, but there are others, that the body will mistake this food as glutinous. And it will cause a low level inflammation or a high level of inflammation and possibly symptoms that someone will not understand because they're on a gluten-free diet. And this was something I experienced, I don't know, 15 years ago, and at least, and I was very sensitive to sesame. My body cross-reacts to sesame, and I was putting tahini on stuff thinking, oh, I'm getting good calcium, and this is so good for me, and I couldn't figure out why every 2 days later I would get searing gut pains. Well, I have celiac, and my body was cross-reacting to sesame. And until I did the right tests, I would have never guessed sesame was the issue. And so I like to educate people about that as well. So again, they can be informed consumers. They can really take the guesswork out of their health, out of their diet, and get the answers they really deserve.
Yeah, that's good. And where do you recommend people go to that for that?
Yeah, to find a practitioner. I mean, I run these tests all over the world, so I am happy to speak to people. And to find a really informed functional medicine person, someone very holistic. The lab that I think is very, very credible is called Cyrex Labs, C-Y-R-E-X. I'm not a spokesperson for them. I don't get any kickbacks if I use their labs or their testing. I just get good results. I just get valid results. And I can then follow up with an individualized treatment plan for someone and witness them get better due to the information we received from those accurate tests through Cyrex. So, of course, no food testing is 1,000% accurate. And being in practice for 23 years, I've seen and worked with many different labs around different kinds of testing. And I have found Cyrex to be the most accurate.
Well, it sounds like something that I should probably do. I don't know if Cyrex is around in Canada, but
It is. It's international, okay. And there are, there are. Yeah. I can talk you through it. It's more than just giving a sample of blood. You actually have to eat certain things for a certain period of time, and a lot of healthcare providers that work with Cyrex lab stuff didn't always know to do that, and so people weren't getting accurate results. So we now understand how people need to eat for 7 full days and then wait 26 days before they take their blood test in order to ensure the body, the immune system, is properly targeted, the food antigens. So I'd be happy to talk you through it.
Cool. That sounds fascinating. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to leave us with? I mean, we've kind of talked about all the areas I felt uniquely geared towards. Is there anything that we've missed that you think is important?
Well, you touched on the body as a garden versus the body as mechanic. And I'd love to just speak another moment about that so that your listeners understand better what that means. And they can read more about it, a little bit about it in the first book, but I go into more detail in the second book because it's so important. It's such a new paradigm shift for a lot of people. So as a healthcare provider, I consider myself a gardener of sorts. And this is very different than a mechanic. And let me share how. In that garden, if you think of a garden, the soil needs to be rich with nutrients. It needs to receive water and sunlight. Before you plant things, you need to understand the season in which you're in and what fruits or vegetables are best to be planted. You need to understand the microbes of the soil, which I liken to the microbes of your gut. You need to be aware of the bugs and the pests that could come in and invade your plants or your soil and eat up your veggies. It's a beautiful, complex ecosystem, right? It's not just the ground that's the garden. It's the entire environment and how the gardener investigates and works with each part of that garden, honoring how interconnected it is and how it's influenced by every other part. And that philosophy is something I learned in Asian medical school, and it has stuck with me because it's such a beautiful picture of how I see health and well-being. And I like to contrast it with the Western medical view of the body as a machine and the physician as a mechanic. Now, there's nothing wrong with that perspective. It's just partial. And I like to fill it out by adding the garden perspective. So the mechanic understands how to remove a part that's broken, but they don't necessarily honor or understand how that part is interconnected with all the other parts. If the wheel needs to be changed, they just change the wheel. They don't necessarily honor that that wheel impacts how fast that car is going to drive. Instead, they're just kind of tunnel vision on the wheel. Mm-hmm. And so I like to educate people about that and get everyone thinking about and considering their own view of their body. Is it more like a garden or is it more like the machine? And it's not that one is better than the other. I mean, I have a preference for viewing myself and my patients as a gardener, as a garden, and me as the gardener, and educating them how they can be a gardener in their own bodies. But if I have a compound fracture, I think I write that example in the book, I'm going to go to the best burn mechanic I can find. And I'm going to get that compound fracture fixed. And then I'm going to follow up with my gardener to explore, why did I get that fracture? What were the stresses in my life? How can my nutrition help that bone heal more quickly? How can I deal with pain in a more natural way by working with my nervous system with, say, perineural injection therapy? How can I holistically address the symptom? And this is where I think we can all find more balance. Instead of just choosing one or the other, the machine or the garden, how can we find balance and use the best of both perspectives, both philosophies, to achieve an optimal health and remember our wholeness? So I would say that would be the last piece I would want to add.
I love it. I'm glad you rephrased that and brought it in, because I thought it was a very key point to the book as well. I thought it was a beautiful metaphor of looking at our bodies and the practitioners we bring in. I really like that. So thank you. I look forward to your next two books. They sound just as good as this one, and I think we could all benefit from understanding our health in a more holistic perspective. So thank you very much, Kristen. It was a wonderful interview. And I'm happy to have you back when you do another one. So
thank you so much, Lori. Thanks for having me. And if any of your listeners want to be in touch with me or join my community of people who are interested in a holistic lifestyle, they can find me at KristenGraceMcGarry.com. That's KristenGraceMcGarry.com.
Nice. We'll list it with the interview so that people can get there easily. So you've been listening to News for the Heart, and we've been getting to the heart of what matters with Kristen Grace McGarry on Holistic Keto for the Gut Health.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instant feedback at bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.